Welcome to Metaphysical Romp with Reverend Paul Hasselbeck and co-host Reverends Bill Holton and Cher Holton. Discover practical applications to bring 21st century metaphysics to work in your life. Here's your host, Paul Hasselbeck.
Welcome to another edition of Metaphysical Romp. This is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck. I'm delighted to be with you. And by golly, it is another beautiful day in my consciousness. Friends, introduce yourselves.
This is Reverend Dr. Cher Holton, and it is another beautiful day in my consciousness.
And I'm Reverend Dr. Bill Holton. It's very definitely another beautiful, beautiful day in my consciousness as well. And I'm privileged to say that Cher and I are the co-founders of a hybrid unity ministry called the Unity Center for Universal, youuniversalprosperity.com.
And you can get there by going very quickly to ucfyp.com. That'll take you right there to all our stuff. You can also go to yourspiritualpractice.com, and that will take you to all our products and wonderful articles and resources for you.
Yes, and everything links. So if you get in one place, you can find the other. And that's the cool things about the digital age, isn't it? And of course, I have my website, paulhasselbeck.com, where you can find my calendar, what I'm doing in Zoomlandia, rather than personally, as well as The Absolute Word, which is my weekly blog that's based on Unity's Daily Word. So speaking about romping, let's get romping. And today we're doing part 6 of this article on Spinoza. And so we are wrapping up that today. Attributes and determinism are our topics. So we're going to be looking at that. As you're getting ready to read, Cher, and to get us up to speed, I'm going to go to the top of the article here. Just to remind people, this is an article by Stephen Gambardella, and it's called Spinoza, the Oneness of Everything. And we found it in Medium, which is a daily information feed. And this was from May 6, 2020. Take it away, Cher.
All right. We've had some fun rocking and rolling with this article and playing with it and kind of using it to take off what we're thinking about. So we're wrapping that up today, and we have a really interesting thing that Spinoza wrote, and that's where we're going to pick up. He said, whether we say that all things happen according to the laws of nature or are ordered by the decree and direction of God, we say the same thing. And
yeah,
that's a quote by Spinoza.
That is an amazing quote. And what's interesting, Bill and I have a little slightly different takes on it, which I think make it an even more interesting quote. So to me, what Spinoza is saying here is that God is the laws of nature. God is the laws of nature. And you're going to hear a little more about that during the absolute word, because today's word is order. And I get into that. I find that really, really interesting. And Bill, and I think Cher heard it a little more differently. So share what you heard.
I heard the God that Spinoza is referring to is a creator God, an anthropomorphic God who decrees by his direction what happens in the universe. And he's claiming that that's the same thing as the laws of nature. So I see that a bit differently, as Paul just pointed out, because depending upon how you define this God of nature, if you're looking at the God as an anthropomorphic being, that's a creator God, then to me, that's not the same. However, comma, if you're looking at that God the way the three of us look at God, which is more of a beingness, a universal beingness or presence that simply is, that underwrites all physicality, then I could agree with Spinoza.
So I think I heard it a little differently this time when you said it. You said God of nature, and he's really saying laws of nature. And that's where I get that he's doing an equivalency there.
Nah.
Anyway, we got to think of his time frame in the 1600s. He was probably also saving his dairy heir. Because if he simply said God is the laws of nature in his time frame, he probably would have been labeled an atheist. And remember, he was already in trouble with his synagogue. So let's...
This is true. And you know, now that I think about it too, Paul, I'm glad you brought that up, because when you think about it, That's the same thing the Fillmores did when they tried to be a bridge between the old theology and their new theology.
Yep.
So they faced the same kind of thing with their terminology.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And we face it still today.
We certainly do.
Terminology.
I don't know how clearly I said it on this program, but if a theist is a person who believes in a deity or an entity, then I'm not a deist, I'm an atheist. But I rather call myself a non-deist, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the word atheist has such baggage with it.
Yep.
And interpretation of what that means. People interpret that word in such a way that it becomes a fear-based, people want to do the sign of the cross at you.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And atheist, like other terms that are thrown at us by organized conventional religion, is really a pejorative term because the fundamentalists don't understand really what they're saying when they use, when they invent the word atheist.
Yeah, and isn't that true of a lot of our words and language? They're, as they evolve in cultural usage, they simply become pejorative. I mean, look at the pejorative nature of the word judgment in unity. Mm-hmm. That is seen as a pejorative word, isn't it?
And the pejorative nature of the word nuns, N-O-N-E-S, is referred to people who don't go to church or aren't affiliated with any particular church. People who refuse to climb back into a dogmatic box, and they call them nuns.
Nuns, and what a poor choice of words.
Oh,
because sure. There's another word that means just the opposite, right?
Right.
N-U-N-S. So not only is language a problem, only one level; it's multiple levels. It sounds like another word. I mean, wow. It's no wonder the English language is hard to understand because there's there and there, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
It becomes difficult.
Right. And the past
the same tense word can have millions of different meanings. We did an activity around the word fast, and you can just, there's tons of meanings of the word fast, of which are completely opposite.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. And what about the word read? And past tense, it's the same spelling, and it's red, and that can be confused with the color red, which is R-E-D. How do people of other language get their head wrapped around the English language? You know, I call it my first and second language, actually.
And of course, we're from the South, so we speak Southern. That's an entirely different language.
That's another. Okay, shall we launch into this final subtitle, which is determinism?
Sure. And it actually pulls off that quote that we just read. The next paragraph actually relates to that quote. And the author says, the implication of this conclusion is enormous, or the implications are enormous. And the implications he's talking about are from that quote.
So we dequoted Gwen. We still got off.
Whether we say that all things happen according to the laws of nature, or are ordered by the decree and direction of God, we say the same thing. So the author then goes in to say the implications of this conclusion are enormous. For one thing, it would mean that we have no control over our destiny. According to Spinoza's system, everything is determined because God is perfect.
Okay, so we got to stop there because this is another case where the author has just taken this way too far. Right?
I think so.
So if we're going with my interpretation of that quote, that God is law, laws don't predetermine anything other than a range of possibilities.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, look at the range of possibility we have with gravity. Mm-hmm. We use it to walk, and we use it to fly in one way or another. So it creates guardrails of what's possible. Now, if something is outside of that guardrail the law creates, it's not possible, that's all.
Yep.
And what's interesting is the more you understand it, the more effectively you can use it. So I think about Cirque du Soleil performers.
What they do appears
to defy gravity, and yet what they're doing is using the dynamics of what they learn about gravity to do these amazing things.
Yes.
And because the underwritten material that if we knew all that there was to know about gravity, Sherry used the word defying gravity. Well, are we really defying gravity, or are we using an aspect of gravity that permits us to do those kinds of things, which is interesting. And the reason I bring that up, and it's interesting that you brought gravity up too, Paul, because some of the latest research on what caused the Big Bang, and I'll be brief, but if people want to, if our listeners want to investigate more, look up Gravity Reversed, for example, online. Physicists are saying now that one of the speculations of what caused the Big Bang is this: at extremely high energies, they're speculating, a special state of matter would turn gravity upside down, rendering it repulsive rather than an attractive force. Something to hold you back, they're saying, it's something that actually repulses you in the opposite direction, which caused, quote unquote, they say, the Big Bang.
Which is really fascinating, because we have an example of that in magnets, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, we sure
right?
Do.
In magnets, if you got light poles, they repel, they push each other away. With the same strength, they attract when you have opposite poles.
Exactly.
So it's really, that's really fascinating detail. Okay, so did we beat that dead horse enough? Or
why don't I skip down to where it says Spinoza's determinism undermines the traditional ethics of Christianity, which holds that human beings have free will. If we did not have free will, we would not be rewarded or punished in the afterlife as described in the scriptures of Christianity.
Spinoza, oh my goodness, I have to stop you there.
Okay.
Okay, because I never put free will into the context of being rewarded or punished in the afterlife. I never made that connection. Did you guys?
I never did either. No, I never really thought about it, but it makes sense.
It makes perfect sense.
Well, the legal system feels the same way when you think about it. Are you guilty or not guilty? Should you be charged for that crime or not?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's all about free will, isn't it? And then we have special rules, because they're all breakable, right? So then we have special rules for people who are not mentally competent, right?
Uh-huh.
So they can't be charged in a way that a person could use their free will in a competent way. So
and then people use their free will to fake that to avoid punishment.
Yes. Yeah. I wonder how successful that is these days.
Well, you saw One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, right? Yeah. Didn't work too well for him. I just dated myself dramatically there. Okay. So Spinoza rejects this idea, believing instead that we have no control over our fate.
Oh my gosh. So that was a shocking thing, because I grew up Presbyterian, and everything being predetermined by God is part of Presbyterianism. And it's like, holy cow. And here we go again into free will, right?
Yeah.
That's why the church at the time disinvited Origen to help them select what would go into the New Testament, because Origen believed in essentially determinism, because he believed in predestination.
Wow. I did not know that detail. That's a very cool detail.
Yeah. Wow. So okay. Spinoza, as I said, he believed that we had no control over our fate. Let me just explain again. This is the author talking to, by the way, interpreting Spinoza. So we have to remember that. Our freedom lies not in the self-determination of our physical body to seek our own destiny, but our understanding of the way the universe really is. To understand the workings of nature is to find peace with it.
I do not understand that paragraph.
I will tell you what it said to me, and I could be way off because I'm not sure I understand it either, but I'm thinking really what he's saying is we don't necessarily have free will. Like, there might be a fate, but then we can either fight that and make it difficult, or understand the principles of nature and then learn how to use them in a way that helps us do it more effectively. I'm not sure if that's what he's saying or not, but that's kind of what that said to me.
Well, it certainly relates back to what we were sharing earlier. Our freedom lies not in the self-determination of our physical body to seek our own destiny. So he's pretty much saying our physical bodies are predetermined in a way. And I would have to agree with that, right? I mean, you think of genetics and all of that.
Mm-hmm. But we can also mm-hmm. now know that we can upregulate and downregulate some of our genes.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
But we're learning we do have some control.
Now we do. Yeah. We have some control. But the control we have is limited by what the genes do. You see?
Right.
And now we're back to the idea, if you just expand it out a little bit, that it's the laws of nature that determine what we can and cannot do in the physical world.
I was just going to say, then we have same people could have similar genetic issues, but based on choices we make about how we take care of ourselves, we have different directions that genetics takes.
But it's the same genes that determine the range. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
The range of possibility.
Right.
And that's what, to me, what laws do. So any of the language you use sound like the laws are actively doing something and that they have some sort of agency, but they don't. And they don't have any consciousness. They don't have any conscious mind. So the laws aren't making choices. It's just because of what the law is
Right. Determines
things. It's like electrons can only exist in predetermined orbits around atoms. They can exist in between orbits. So that creates a certain predeterminism, but it's not a conscious predeterminism.
If you walk off a roof,
yes,
you're going to fall because of the law of gravity.
Exactly.
And the law of gravity doesn't care how much money you make or, you know, what job you have or where you live in the city. If you if you walk off, you're going to drop, unless you're wearing something special that helps deal with the law of gravity, like the guys in the suits that can fly.
Yeah,
it depends upon what that law of gravity is operating into. In experiences by science now in a vacuum, scientists have placed a feather and a bowling ball in a vacuum on a shelf, and at a particular precise moment, the feather is released, the bowling ball is released in a vacuum, and they fall at the same rate.
Right.
In a vacuum.
So the environment
So there's gravity. How gravity works in a vacuum is different than how gravity works in an atmosphere.
But it's gravity. So understanding that allows you to use that knowledge to do certain things.
Yeah.
So I can understand a feather in a vacuum, but a bowling ball, wouldn't that wreck my Dyson sweeper?
Probably.
Yeah.
And in a vacuum.
Yeah, and you couldn't be any quicker getting there than the feather.
Right.
The bowling ball. You're traveling at the same speed.
They're traveling at the same speed.
Oh my God.
Oh, this is so fun, isn't it? When we get into some of this wacky world of things. And then he says, to understand the workings of nature is to find peace with it. That relates to the idea of doing the same thing over and over again to get a different result. If you don't know the laws of nature, you might be doing that, and it's impossible to get a different result.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow.
So as we're getting close to the end of this, I wanted to bring out one more point that he said, because I think it really relates to an issue we hear in classes a lot and the things that we're doing. I'm sure you do too. He mentions that rather than revealing God to us, is Spinoza simply recasting the deity as nature? And I think a lot of people want to get away from God out there as an anthropomorphic being, but then they end up saying spirit, universe, other names that they might call, still a being creating or bringing them experiences. So they haven't really broken the actual way they see God. They're just using a different name.
Maybe
that's a step.
And the other thing here is, I'm wondering if Steve, the author, is being imprecise, because he's saying God is nature, when my understanding is what Spinoza said, God is the laws of nature.
Yes.
Those are two different things.
Yeah.
Nature is what results from how law operates. It's not the law itself, right? And so that creates a possibility of misunderstanding what's going on.
Yeah.
So Bill, you said you got a book on Spinoza. Will you figure this out for us, please?
Well, you know, what I like about this too is when you look at some of the outliers in antiquity and what they, the philosophies, the insights they come up with to understand how we relate to the universe. Same thing as the Fillmores. When you look at how to feel, how Charles of Myrtle interpreted scripture, that kind of thing, to be a bridge of higher thought. But it's neat to see what these folks come up with in their era, in their time, and based on the informations, the scientific information at their time. And that also implies that where did they get their higher thought if it didn't come from the known information at the time?
Yeah.
It had to come from somewhere. They were connected. And as we just sit here a little while ago, that Spinoza rejected this idea, believing instead, that we are expressions of the one substance, and you find peace with nature. What does finding peace with nature mean then? If you don't understand everything associated with your environment, but you have these intuitions, again, where do the intuitions come from?
So here again, for me, I think the author's being imprecise. I find peace with the laws of nature.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, because I know I can't change them, but I can learn how to use them. So that imprecision of language creates a kind of confusion, as maybe connecting dots that Spinoza did not connect.
Right.
True.
And I'm too lazy to read him.
Questioning unquestioned answers. He was doing it then.
Yep.
We're still doing it now.
Okay, so one thing we have to do now is pivot to the absolute word. The absolute word is based on Sunday messages appearing in Daily Word, a copyrighted Uni publication, has been used with permission. This comes from Sunday, June 14th, 2020. The word is order, order. And the affirmation, as I wrote it, law underwrites order in my life and the world. And you can see how this connects to the Spinoza thing, purely by coincidence, right? Here's what I said. Spiritual laws and natural laws are cut from the same cloth. They are divine, not because God made them, but because they are God. God is principle. Law is principle in action. Charles Fillmore said, order is the first law of the universe. Indeed, there could be no universe unless its various parts were kept in perfect harmony. And that comes from Mystery of Genesis, page 241. And then I go on. Law underwrites the order demonstrated in the universe. I notice patterns and order in the universe and the world around me. Everything is orderly because of underpinning law, known and unknown. I notice patterns in my life. As the seasons of nature change, so do the seasons of my life. Even when it is not apparent to me, I know my life is always orderly based on law. Law underwrites order in my life and the world. And so it is. And thank you, friends, for listening. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Cher. This is Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck signing off. Goodbye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.